James McGrath, I am recording. Are you recording?
I am. I am recording. Can I speak? I don't know.
I can hear you, so I'm happy. And yes, you can indeed speak, my good friend.
Let's get it on. Curb and Canyon. We've got quite a lot to talk about today. And it's been a few weeks. So, welcome to Curb and Canyon.
It's been a few weeks, hasn't it? But do you know what? We did actually catch up, though, on another podcast, did we not?
Yeah, we did.
With the good folks over at the Porsche Talk podcast, Mark and Ajmal. That was great catching up with those dudes.
It was. It was a lot of fun. The Curb and Canyon takeover of that podcast.
Although I must confess, I felt bad because I recorded the way we normally record, but then Mark said, don't worry about it, it's all good, I've got it sorted. And then I listen back and I'm like, oh man, my audio quality was terrible. If only I'd known. Oh man,
yeah. Well, you know, it is what it is. They're such great guys and what a great podcast. Yeah. And actually, with Mark being over in the States this past week at Rennsport Reunion, he's had, you know, quite a few good run-ins. Have you been following him on social media?
I have. I see he even managed to record a pod with the one and only Matt Farah. That's a great get.
I know, right? So cool. Yeah, really, really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So what have we got on our agenda today?
Oh, plenty. School car shows, your new car, little green update. I want to talk about the winter rally. I'm going to ask a philosophical question, and then we're going to talk about your video of the week.
There's a funny story behind that a little bit. My video of the week, quote unquote. But that's going to be, it is a good video.
So just so you know, I've not updated the show notes from when I wrote these from a few weeks ago when we were going to record. So the show notes actually include a different video of the week. So it'll be interesting to see if you can just bring the ad lib magic when we get to the video of the week segment. I have high hopes. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've got loads of time before we get to video of the week.
Everyone will have tuned out by then, don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk about a school car show. This is one out of the box for me. If there's one thing I never thought I would be attending, it was a car meet at a school. And Riders School, which is a primary and high school, so I guess that's the equivalent if you're in the States of junior, middle, and high school all in one, had a school car show for Father's Day. And it was incredible. There was live music, there was barbecue, there was a great mix of cars. You know, there were Lamborghinis, there were Lotuses, there were Minis, there was all sorts of stuff. But there was a 991 GT3 RS, there was a 73 911, there was a Guards Red 930, and of course I rolled up in little green. And you know, I think one of the really cool things was it was a great vibe. Not too many cars, and this whole thing, it was the idea of one of the students, a dude named Ashan, so shout out to you, good sir. That's, one hell of an effort to pull that together, and it was a really cool thing to go to my son's school, roll up with the car, and walk around chatting to like-minded car enthusiasts.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you say a Guards Red 930?
I did.
Wow, I mean, That's quite a special car.
That's like 80s poster car, right? Like it really does just tick all the boxes in terms of that, I don't know, just the whole sort of stereotypical Porsche from the 80s. That's the car, right? Like a red one or a black one, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so cool.
Yeah. I was hoping to get, there was a People's Choice Award. And I was hoping maybe Little Green might come through with the goods and take home the chockies, but no, sadly, there was a. To be honest, when I rolled in, I thought I could be a chance here, but then there was a four 488 or a 458. I'm not good with my Ferraris. But also there was a purple Lamborghini Aventador there. I think it was an Aventador. And I thought, as soon as I saw that, I thought, that's like, it's a school. Kids just obviously go nuts for Lamborghinis. And sure enough, that car took the win. Not surprisingly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. And just great vibes.
You know, it's funny. Whenever I take Luke and Adam to the cars and coffee meets and, you know, even just the Porsche only car shows,
They
know how much I love Porsche and they understand that I have a Porsche. It's like, hey guys, are you excited about today? Yeah. Will there be any Lamborghinis? Yeah. all I want to see are the Lamborghinis.
Of course. But think about it. I mean, like, even for me as a kid, you know, I would see Porsches. I would see 911s around.
Yeah.
You never saw a Lamborghini. You saw it literally at the start of the Cannonball Run, which my brother and I used to watch every Saturday night.
Yeah.
And that was it. You'd never saw one in real life. They may as well have been a spaceship. So, yeah, to see one when you're a kid, that's pretty special.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if I saw a Guards Red 930 to me right now, and as a long-time, you know, Porsche fanboy, I think that would have blown my mind.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. And actually, the GT3 RS, I think from memory, was a Lava Orange 991 Gen 1. And there's something about a Lava Orange GT3 RS. I think the first 991 GT3 RS I ever saw was Lava Orange. So to me, it's in that car, that's the color.
Yeah.
And yeah, just looked ace. Looked so, so good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to think. I had a friend with the GT. Well, it was the GT3 in Lava Orange, but even so, you know, wasn't the RS. But it was just absolutely stunning, absolutely electric. Well, so that's pretty cool. So is this going to become like an annual event in your part of the bush?
Look, I don't know, because I think look, it may be. I'm not sure because I know that again, Ashan, I think he is in his final year of school this year. So whether somebody picks up the mantle and runs with it next year, only time will tell.
Yeah.
I think they did do it last year though. So anyway, fingers crossed. It was a really cool event. And I don't get along to that many car meets. And so to go to one that was in the afternoon, it was a beautiful day actually, that just had a really cool vibe. And like I say, live music, and the live music was all done by the students. So it just, I don't know, it just had this real cool laid back sort of community vibe to it. It wasn't really so much about the cars. It was just a cool event to go and do and really well run. So yeah, hats off and congrats to the school for doing
it. Yeah, that's awesome. Good job.
So I see you've been, well, I mean, what are we calling the new car? Did we decide? We talked about this with Mark and Ashmar. Where did we land?
Bluey Tooey.
Here's the thing. I can't, like, I want to just sit here and tear shreds off you for how lame that name is, but yeah, my car's called Little Green because literally when I first had it, every time we'd go anywhere, the kids would ask me, they basically wanted to know if we were taking the 964 or my Jeep, which is white. And they'd just say, are we going in big white or little green? So it just became Little Green. So that's no more creative than Bluey Tooey.
You know what? I would be perfectly happy if someone came up with another name and another suggestion. But yeah, Bluey Tooey just seemed to be funny and just, you know, kind of flows off the tongue. Mate, yeah, I love it.
So have you, with driving, what have we done? Have you done some, put some miles?
Well, I have actually, yeah. And this is the one bummer actually to report back is that I didn't make it to Rensport Reunion. As I tried. Yeah. I gave it a really good go. So I was out in the 991, out in Bluey Tooey, still managed to do just over 2,000 miles. Day one, drove down from Minnesota to Kansas City. I met up with my friend Michael of Michael Motor and Meets fame on YouTube, didn't come in his martini livery covered 996 because he sold it He arrived in his...
I was about to say, I think that car's for sale, right?
Gone. It's gone.
Wow.
I think he got bit by the bug, you know, because we talk a lot, and after, I think, you know, Jay Reed recently sold a car, and Chris sold a car, and Michael is, like, the only one who hasn't yet sold a car, so he's like, well, you know, fuck you guys. but he arrived in his off-road capable Cayenne, you know, jacked up.
Yeah, goody.
Amazing tires, amazing wheels. You know, he's got the skid plates. He's got the front bumper and the rear bumper kind of, you know, it's just, it's tight. Really good Gen 1 Cayenne off-road. So he and I left from Kansas City and then drove to Denver the next day. You know, really, really nice drive. But on day three, I was starting to get reports from home that my middle son, Adam, was playing up and he and I are really close and yada, yada, yada. Long story short, I got halfway through the Rockies and I was just like, Michael, I'm going to have to turn around. Like, I'm going to have to just go home and see my boy. So I did the right move with, you know, dad life and... It took me the best part of 2 days to get home from the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
But instead of a 9-day trip via California and Rensport Reunion, I ended up doing a 4-day trip just via the Rockies and made it home. But anyway, the 991 performed so well. It is such a nice car to drive. Yeah. I absolutely love it. And I'll talk more about it in a second. But what I do want to say is, when we got to Breckenridge in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, Michael was starting to talk on the radio about, wouldn't it be good if we could find some off-road kind of adventure? And it just so happened that we passed the head of a trail. I parked my car on the side of the road in the middle of the mountains, jumped in with Michael, and we spent the best part of an hour or so driving, dude, up this boulder-laden passage in the mountains. He was driving, and I was in the passenger seat with the drone. And it was awesome. I'll have to share some of the footage with you. He did really well, and I'm just amazed at how well that Cayenne performed. But I tell you what, it's pretty difficult trying to navigate trees and boulders with a drone when you're sat in the passenger seat being thrown around left and right, up and down.
Wait, that's a surprise to you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose it shouldn't be. But man, that's a really capable car. I was like absolutely blown away.
Has he done that sort of off-roading before?
A little bit, yeah, since he bought the car about a year ago. Now. He's been doing quite a lot of it. And there are quite a few sort of mud trails and dirt trails and that sort of stuff where he lives down in Mississippi. But I don't think there are too many mountains in that part of the town. So that part of town, that part of the country. But in the Rocky Mountains, of course, there were plenty. We started off and I was like, oh, this is going to be fairly easy. You know, just it's rocky. It's not too bad.
And then
all of a sudden, you know, you can feel the car like leaning all the way to the right and you realize, okay, that boulder's probably the size, you know, of a basketball, and then that one's even bigger, and that one's even bigger, and he's continuing to try and climb over them. You know, are we going to get stuck?
Wow,
it was really good.
That's amazing. And so, did you drive? Forgive my ignorance, but in the Rockies, are there any? There's twisties through there. Did you get to sort of experience the car? In its natural habitat.
Yeah, I really did. I mean, the first days all the way to Kansas City is cornfield, straight and boring. From Kansas City to Denver, it's pretty much the same. You're just driving through the Great Plains. But on day three, driving through the Rockies, day four, driving through Wyoming and into Minnesota, I was doing all county roads, and it was just... It was quite literally, I would say 800 of the 1,000 miles I did over the last 2 days were twisty and turnies. Absolutely phenomenal. And definitely a lesson for me to avoid the interstates, which are basically just straight lines. Yeah. But I was amazed. I went from Breckenridge, I went north for like 2 or 3 hours, and it was all twisty turnies, staying off the highways, just staying on the county roads. Wyoming was absolutely spectacular. mountains on the left, prairie on the right, and then the county roads take you through just lots of canyons and undulating hills, and there are deer everywhere. There are buffalo everywhere. It's just gorgeous. So I really do feel like I got to test the car. You know, I was pushing it into corners and I was pulling out of corners, the left and the right, had sport mode on, had the windows up, had the windows down, just absolutely full throttle a couple of times. And of course, I think Wyoming is one of the least populated states in the country.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, without incriminating myself, let's just say I nearly incriminated myself.
Yeah.
And it's incredible what that car is capable of. Yeah. I mean, just absolutely incredible what that car is capable of. And every now and again, I'd find the sort of like perfect setup where there was a straight enough piece of road going into a corner with mountains and no cars on the road. So I actually came to a full stop, took a breath, did launch control, and then just started again. It was just so cool.
That's
but I love it, man. That's I really love it. And the turbocharged engine performed beautifully. No kind of feeling of that, you know, sort of turbo lag. The sound of the exhaust with sports mode on, valves open. I'm just, you know, it's awesome.
Do you recall, because it's been a few years now since you sold your first gen 991, so I'm interested to hear if it feels familiar to that, which I imagine it would, but also if you can speak to the differences, or is there just too much of a time lapse between the two?
No, I can probably still speak to that. And I've actually driven quite a few 991s over the course of the last couple of years since selling mine, all naturally aspirated to sort of have a good feel for it. You know, there are a couple of minor but very important aesthetic differences, which a lot of 991 owners always jump to, which is the tail lights and the eyebrow running lights on the front.
So can I just, I got to interrupt you there, because you remember when, because obviously you took your, and for anyone not aware of this, any listeners, James had a first gen 991 and basically retrofitted the second gen 991 tail lights and front bumper setup, right?
Just I put the sports bumper on the front of the 991.1, but yeah, the rear.
Oh, you didn't do
rear end. I upgraded to the 991.2.
Yeah. Okay. So it's funny because I remember when the first gen 991 came out, the first time I saw one on the road, I've spoken about this before. I remember it vividly. It was a white one that passed me going through a tunnel. And so my first kind of rolling picture of that car was a rear, and I sped up to stay with it, was a rear 3/4 angle of it.
Nice.
And I remember just looking at the taillights and thinking, they're amazing. They're so good. So I fell in love with that first gen 991 when it came out, because I really thought they'd nailed the design. And I have to be honest that the second gen, I wasn't as convinced by. But it's funny how over time now, I really think the taillights on that second gen and the front and just that little air duct on the lower rear bumper, there's just a couple of little details that are minor aesthetic differences, but I really do think they add quite a bit.
Yeah, I would agree. And I know loads of 991 owners that sort of feel the same. To be honest, as much as I love the 3D taillights of the Dot 2, the Dot 1 taillights never bothered me. They were a little
absolutely
a little two-dimensional, but they look great. And I think the first time I saw one on the road was from the same kind of angle. And I remember thinking, wow, what's happened to the back of that 911? It looks great. But the front of the Dot 1s with the eyebrow kind of you know, indicators and running lights underneath the headlights, I always just felt like they were just a bit clumsy. And you go back to the 997.2, I think the same thing. I look actually at the 997.1, and they are quite clumsy on that car as well. and relatively big compared to the headlights, but at least they're simple, you know, yeah, and they're, true. You know, the lines are pretty straight and so on. But when the .2991 came out, I just thought they nailed the front end. You know, all the focus is now back to the headlights because the LED strips are much thinner and just simple strips, and they don't detract from the headlights at all. And I think there's even just like the aerodynamics on the front bumper. There are two little grooves that sort of bring the front end to life a little bit more with the .2. And we're talking really minor things, you know. I'm sure if I put a .1 and a .2 in front of Ruthie, she wouldn't know the difference.
No.
But there's that for sure. But what's funny is sitting in an almost identical 991 cockpit to what I had with the .1, you've got to be really a Porsche fanboy to notice the differences immediately. I mean, it's basically the airbag in the steering wheel and the fact that the PCM screen just sort of fits into the dash a little more seamlessly.
Yes, yeah.
But apart from that, you're sitting in basically an identical cockpit, almost identical cockpit, but it's like a completely different animal, a completely different experience in that, okay, it's still fast, it still has all of the great handling, and you still feel like you're in a Porsche cockpit, but you know, it's almost like Jekyll and Hyde. You know, you're sitting with the person with a completely different personality one minute, and you know, you go from one to the other. Drive them back to back, maybe the differences aren't that obvious. But yeah, to me, having owned a 991.1 a couple of years ago, and I'm now setting in a 9.2, I can tell the difference immediately, and it's epic. It's just like the lower end torque really makes the car feel much more powerful and much more responsive. The spool of the turbos gives you that sort of just fanboy adrenaline rush kind of every time you hear them. I love it, man.
Yep.
Absolutely love it.
That's so good to hear. And it's great to hear too that you found a different mode of getting across the countryside, you know, because so often when you and I talk about these drives that you do and the sort of commute that you need to do to get to these amazing locations and great roads, it sounds like you've found some new ways of getting there that are fun on the way there, or at least in this instance on the way back.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, next time I go to the Rocky Mountains, I'll probably retrace my steps through South Dakota and Wyoming. Yeah. But, you know, as much as I enjoyed the 800 miles or the 700 miles of that final 1,000 miles on the return leg, the last 200 or 300 miles, basically from the eastern side of South Dakota to Minnesota, was just once again mind-numbingly boring. So even in that, you just for some reason here in the Midwest, there's always some kind of commute to get to decent roads, because you just got to escape the cornfields. Basically, what's going on with your rally? Winter rally.
Oh, winter rally. Yes. Well, so we had the winter rally. Gosh, it feels so long ago now. It was a great event. As promised. I think I said, so I sent around not a poster, but just a flyer thing on our WhatsApp group. And I think I said, it said winter rally, August, whatever the date was, pissing rain, good time.
So that's a thing, isn't it? You say every time you do these rallies, I don't know if it's just in the winter, dude, you often find rain.
No. Dude, not often. Always. It doesn't matter if it's winter, spring, summer, autumn. Every time we do a rally, it's not just a little bit of rain. It's like catastrophic conditions every time. So I feel like, and to be honest, last year when I did the first winter rally, and it's just a single day event, but when I did the first one last year, it was actually sunny. And all day, and everyone was wearing t-shirts. It was amazing. And there was a part of me that thought, okay, this is where I've gone wrong. I've been trying to organize rallies in the times when I think the weather is going to be exceptionally good.
Yeah.
and yet invariably we run into bad weather. So maybe it's like the George Costanza thing, right? Like, I should do the opposite of everything I think I should do, and maybe my life would be better. So last year when we did the winter rally, it was a beautiful day. So there was a little part of me in the back of my head thinking this year could be the same, but it was not. So look, we set off and it was bucketing rain, but it was still a great day. And partly because, you know, typically we head for the mountains and we have roads that we drive week in, week out. And then when we do something like the Alpine Range Rally, those roads that we drive often then feed into other Alpine roads.
Yeah.
Because it's winter, we try and avoid the Alpine regions just because we know we can hit snow. So we actually take a completely different route than what we would usually do. And so that's great. The roads are different. Are they as good and technical as some of the others we drive? Not necessarily, but yeah. I think everyone really just appreciates a different experience. Also, one of the big differences is it's a lot more open. You know, so often, if you've looked at any of my rally videos, so often yeah. we are driving through the sort of Aussie bush, let's say.
Yeah.
But these are all much more elevated roads with beautiful views of rolling green hills. It sort of looks like you could be in Wales or somewhere. So it's brilliant. A few highlights for me. One was my buddy Kale has a 73 Kale. Tangerine 911T.
Oh.
And
I think I've seen this one before.
For some of the day he was driving in front of me. And man, I was so impressed with the way he was hustling that car.
Really?
This idea that you know, the long hoods are cool, but you know, if you're going to hustle, then you want something more modern. Could I have gone a little bit quicker in that moment? Yeah, maybe, but it was brilliant. I was really happy going the speed we were going. It wasn't slow by any stretch. And he was just hustling along in this thing, and you could just see it moving around. You could see what a great job he was doing driving it. It was brilliant. And so when we stopped for lunch, we actually agreed to do a car swap.
Huh.
So I was so excited. I've never driven this car, and I've only ever driven... I had a brief run in my friend Irwin's long hood. I can't really recall what that was like. I literally drove it for 5 minutes. And then I had my buddy Gerard's Targa for a couple of days. So I got to drive that and really get a feel for that. That was a great car. But interestingly, Kale's car is just, the ride quality is amazing.
Yeah.
And the engine, I can't believe the amount of torque and the amount of reward you get for revving it all the way out, it was incredible. Now, I must confess that as we took off to this was after lunch, we took off, I was in his car, it was wet. So I was being very cautious.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can't remember what the tires are. By comparison, I think he took off like a scalded cat in my 964. But it did take me a while. There's a definite adjustment that you go through because, you know, suddenly you can feel everything. You can really feel the car moving around you. And for how wonderful this car is, I feel like it wants some time spent just buttoning up everything inside. There's a lot of like really nasty rattles in this car,
oh, really?
Which drive me nuts. But anyway, but then what happened was somebody came on the radio and actually said, guys, be careful, there's oil on the road. And because the road was wet, you know, when you see an oil slick on a wet road, it sort of has that rainbow color.
Yeah.
And a few people had quite scary moments on this. And in fact, we found out on the news that night that someone actually had a crash right nearby, about 2 kilometers from where we were. And because they just went spearing off the road, and actually someone was killed. So it was absolutely awful. So I really slowed down at that point. But then once we hit the dry, I drove the car long enough, I think probably for 25 minutes, half an hour maybe, on some really lovely flowing twisty roads where I did get into a great rhythm with it. And it was just, it is such a fun car. It is such a fun car and immensely capable. However, I will say this, when we finally stopped and swapped cars again, right before getting onto the highway to drive home, I got into Little Green. Dude, it felt like a GT3 after this car. It felt rock solid. The gear shift felt like a bolt action rifle.
Yeah.
And the acceleration was just incredible. I thought, wow, talk about sort of adjusting and realigning yourself. It was brilliant. But I tell you the thing about these rallies and these drives, so much of it comes down to the people you're with.
Yeah.
And you know, because invariably something happens, right? It doesn't matter how well you plan it, there's always a something. So I do try and be meticulous in the planning. I actually put a good amount of pressure on myself that I want everybody to come away and say that was a great day.
Yeah.
And so in the morning when we stopped for coffee, I got a message from the place that I'd organized for lunch saying they couldn't open that day. Something had happened. Didn't understand what. So they weren't going to be able to sit us down. And this was in some little town in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, so I'm thinking, oh shit, I'm going to have to organize something else here. We get into town. A few people were ahead of us. They just rolled into, there was a brewery that did pizzas. Everyone just rolled in there, happy, no problem. Yeah. Rolling with the punches. There was one of the roads that kind of connected two roads was actually closed and it, you know, hadn't shown on the maps. And so, it's, you know, no one jumped on the radios and said, oh, well, this is, you know, what are we going to do now? We just kept going. My buddy, Will, I've got a shout out to him because he opened, we use this app called Scenic. It is, I think, far and away the best navigation app there is. And Will's just whipped it open, actually edited the map on the fly while he's driving. And then just starts radioing everyone, yes, just keep going. We're going to get to this road. You're going to turn left here. You know, just people being proactive and sorting things out versus people saying, oh, well, this isn't what I signed up for, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so that's great. One of the things we did see really demonstrated is just how important radios are to take. It really makes such a difference. I mean, for starters, with the safety issue that we had with this oil spill, because the oil slick ran for, you know, 4 or 5 kilometers maybe.
Yeah.
So 2 or 3 miles. It was a long way that we were having to be careful. And I think from memory, my mate Simon was up the front, so he was constantly updating people and warning people and those sorts of things. Are just, that's where having the radios is just so valuable.
Yeah.
And you know, also if someone, you know, there's a dude, George, who came along with us, he's such a good guy. And I think there was one point where a few people were like, hey George, do you mind if we jump in front of you? Yeah, no problem. They jump in front of him. So it's such a good thing, just from a safety perspective and also an enjoyment perspective. Yeah. But yeah, look, overall, just it just kind of shows even when the weather is rubbish. I mean, I must confess, I'm over driving in the rain. I'm really over driving in the rain. But even when you do, if you're out with a good group of people and you're driving amazing roads and in these cars, it's still a really, really good time.
Yeah, totally. The radios for my group over here in Minnesota were a game changer for us. I always joke thinking, you know, sort of car enthusiasts, we're a funny bunch, you know. We like having friends and this is a social kind of thing, but we spend the majority of our time alone in our own cars. But once you introduce the radios into the mix, though, you're getting the best of both worlds. You're alone in your car.
Yes.
You're pushing it to the limit. You're doing whatever you want to do. And you're at the same time, you're still connected to everybody. It was just like I said, a complete game changer for us over here.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I like, you know, we use them obviously to communicate everything from you know, potholes or cyclists on the road or any sort of hazards, obviously, or to keep track of one another, but also just for banter while you're out on the road. Oh, totally. You know, it's because there's often times you're in a transport stage, a liaison stage, let's say, between twisties and another set of twisties.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so nice. I'll hear my buddy Al just pop up on the radio and say to whoever, PJ, you know, PJ, your car looks incredible in my mirrors.
Or, yeah,
you know,
sure.
It's just, you know, or someone will be playing, I don't know, some stupid song, and they'll just hit the talk button on their walkie-talkie for 10 seconds. And it's just, I don't know, it's just, you're like, oh, wow, who's listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan right now?
Yeah.
It's just cool. I just like it.
So on the agenda this week, we've got a philosophical discussion, which you've posed, and I'm actually kind of interested to see where this goes, to be honest. I wonder how people are going to react to this. So you want to take us into this?
Yeah. And I'm interested to hear how you react to it as well, obviously, because I'm not sure I have a position on this question. And so actually what I want to do is kind of unpack it together, tease it out together, and see what we think. So it's a pretty simple thing. I want to pose a question. Do we all just need to calm the fuck down? So, you know, why do we... Because truly, we all get really outraged with Porsche all the time. You know, you and I talked about the ST on the pod and, you know, how we both love the car, but we're so worried that the wrong people will buy the 1963 examples. And I know the Porsche Talk podcast, they talked about the same thing. We talked about the Spyder RS. We said it's not a real Rennsport because it's not a homologated racing car.
Yeah.
So fucking what? The truth is that 99.999% of the people pissing and moaning about not being able to get a 911 ST allocation, you and me included, are in no position to request an allocation for the 911 ST in the first place. So why do we get so pissed off about it? You know, you think about it, there were 991 911 Rs. That gave Porsche actually the confidence to put a manual in the GT3, so a lot more people benefited from that. And then finally, how arrogant are we to decide that we're the only ones that truly enjoy our Porsches in an authentic way? I mean, you and I, between the two of us, actually enjoy our cars quite differently.
Yeah.
And sometimes I love ripping through the hills with friends, driving my car on the edge of what I can safely do on a public road. But then sometimes I like driving on my own at normal speed. Or sometimes I like daily driving it. And sometimes I like going to wineries with my wife or going to Cars and Coffee. So who the hell am I to say that one is any more valid, or any of those is any more valid, than the person who wants to protect their investment and enjoy their car sparingly? If someone just wants to cruise to Cars and Coffee and have bragging rights, or drive up and down the PCH and do nothing else but get coffee, why is that any less valid? So I just ask, do we all need to stop getting shitty at Porsche for releasing limited numbered cars that are incredible that we can't afford anyway, and start acknowledging that it's brilliant that they have the sack to release those cars in the first place, and stop being so outraged by it?
Bloody hell. Bloody hell. Okay, there's an awful lot to unpack there.
There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, exactly. And I've also got to be very careful about how I approach this, because it's probably just going to shine a spotlight on my natural biases and completely warped personality.
Well, because, dude, and let me say, because all of this, right, this is... I'm guilty of all of this. I'm guilty of every bit of judgment I just talked about. I'm guilty of every bit of outrage. You know, hand on heart, I'm not suggesting in any way that this is the behavior of other people. It's actually been the behavior of me, but I also know it's the behavior of a lot of other people. So I just wanted to pose the question.
So the question is really, should Andy Gaunt calm the fuck down?
Is Andy Gaunt in danger of cardiac arrest?
I think so. Or violently murdering some poor guy that's just taken out a brand new ST to Cars and Coffee. Yeah. Book yeah. you!
911 ST, first drive,
oh
huh?
Oh, my God. Well, actually, just off subject a little bit, I heard yesterday that Porsche are going to force ST owners to lease the car for the first year to try and avoid flipping. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't even know if that's even going to work as well, because if I'd happily... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
yeah.
But that's interesting. I don't know. You know, I think you take any scenario, you take any kind of niche, any hobby, and there are always going to be those people that are so absorbed and interested by it that they yep. live to talk about anything to do with the brand, anything to do with the football club, anything to do with the players, you know, anything to do with the
very
sport.
True, very true.
I can sometimes just listen to my dad and my brother talk for hours about, you know, whatever they're talking about this one particular football player or this one particular scenario. And I'm like, it was a game that happened weeks ago. Just who gives a fuck? Move on. But to them, it's really important to discuss the finest levels of minutiae of all of those different scenarios that interest and excite them. And I think that's part of it. But I don't know, to try and answer your question as directly as I can, yeah, for sure. I think we do need to calm down when it comes to, you know, sort of getting outraged with Porsche, because for all of the reasons you just said, I mean... Could you imagine if Porsche just turned around and was like, well, okay, we're not going to release any of these more variants. We're just going to churn out Carreras in the thousands and thousands and thousands forever.
Yeah.
Or you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got, if you want a sports car, you got a Carrera, but we're focusing all of our R&D into more efficient Cayennes and Macans. You know, and Homer Simpson cars, we'd be absolutely gutted.
Of course we would.
In some respects, I'm like, well, it's nice having all these other things in the Porsche portfolio, but I just, you know, I want the rainbow of 911s to choose from. So, I can definitely see that.
I mean, you know, if you look at something like the ST or even the R back in the day, You got to reach a point where you stop worrying about who's buying it, because we all know who's buying it for the most part, and how it's going to be used. And like I say, it's really easy to get really judgy about the way somebody chooses to use their car, but that's an individual choice that everyone's entitled to make. And for everyone who does just use the car for what we believe to be the wrong reasons, let's say, I'm sure there are just as many who'll buy something like an ST and genuinely use it and drive the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. And good luck to all of them. As long as Porsche keeps creating these cars, I'm trying to get myself into a mindset that is, you know what, I'm just really glad that car exists. And having watched the reviews that all dropped last week on the 911 ST, it's really interesting. They talked about how there's a chassis engineer in the GT department at Porsche who was given the job of tuning the chassis on the ST.
Yeah.
And it took a year to do it. And so all of the journos who have driven this car have also been given access to, at the same time, a GT3 Touring, and they're driving actually reasonably poorly conditioned roads so that you could see how well the ST actually handles on the road. And everyone that I've heard talk about the comparative experience of driving the GT3 Touring has said the difference is night and day in terms of the way that the car tracks, the way the car handles, the way it tackles bumps and the like. So you have to think, therefore, and again, this still isn't going to impact you or me, maybe one day it will, but the next gen, the 992.2 GT3, do you think that's going to have the same suspension setup it has currently? Of course not. It will then inherit the amazing work that's been done on the ST, the same way that the Gen 2 991 GT3 inherited the manual gearbox because Porsche had the confidence to do it based on demand.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There is always a trickle-down effect from these halo cars. Again, does that affect you and me buying 10-year-old Carreras? Well, not now, but maybe in 15 years when I decide I've finally got enough money to buy a second-gen 992 GT3, I get the benefit of that. So fuck it. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. And, think about the hybrid engine that's in the 918. That trickle-down effect, you know, won't be felt for maybe another few years. And ultimately, that's a 10-year kind of path or longer. But all of that supercar influence and supercar testing and technology and design will have a huge influence on the hybrid engines that are coming that we haven't yet, gotten fully on board with. And guess what? They're going to be amazing. Regardless of what you think, they're going to be amazing.
Yeah, they are. And do you know what? Even the fact that Porsche are still producing their highest level sports cars with manual gearboxes is incredible. But also the fact that they even said, do you know what? Let's have an enthusiast-based Carrera. Let's do a Carrera T that is for the enthusiast, the driver, the person who wants to take the car out on the weekend but can't afford a GT product. Let's do that. There is so much that Porsche is doing to appeal to what is a really broad segment, right? You've got people who buy 911 Carreras or Carrera S's to daily drive and may never take them on a twisty road. They just love the design of the car, love being seen in the car, all of those things. And then there are the enthusiasts with money, but then there are also the enthusiasts who have less money. They're really actually, I think, meeting so many different market segments and doing a really good job of it. I don't know. I just thought, I heard so much negativity around the ST, and none of it, from us included, and none of it was based on the car itself. It was all, we're all up in arms about how we couldn't get an allocation, as if otherwise you and I were going to call our local Porsche dealer and say, sign me up, I want one. I can't do that, so why am I worried about it?
So I think this is where, kind of, human nature comes into it, right? I mean, how much of this do you think, and this is where I'm going to really expose the way you and I think, if we think this way. But, how much of this is cognitive dissonance? You know, the fact that are we being triggered by something that we are envious of and that we really want to have ourselves?
I can't have it, so I don't want him to have
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
You know what? I can't afford this, or I can't get there, and I'm probably never going to get it. So I'm gonna throw rocks at it.
Of course. No, and we do it, and we go, I can't have it, and look, that person can have it, and they're not even using it the way I would use it. They're not using it properly. They don't deserve it as much as I do. So I'm going to start throwing my toys out of the pram and stomping my feet, and I'm going to go stand in the corner and have a big sook about it.
Exactly.
You're right. It's human nature. But you know what? I actually think you're onto something. The way that, every Monday morning quarterback wants to talk about the game on the weekend and the poor choices that the coach made and all of these things, we do it, right? I think you're so right. We're so invested in whatever our hobby and passion is that we always believe that when we're talking with friends that we could do this better. Yeah, we could make better decisions in the Porsche marketing department or the coach of the team.
Well, and so that takes me back to so many of my wonderful friends, certainly back from Liverpool growing up, who have these very heated debates about, the value or the quality of a player on a particular scenario, and most of it's coming from the fact that I could probably do better. Why don't I have the opportunity to be striker for Liverpool? That's good shit.
I know. Or, you know, we'll throw, we'll be talking about Formula One and you'll talk about Lance Stroll and you'll be like, oh my God, he messed up again on the weekend. The guy's a moron. What's he even doing out there? How's he got to drive? It's just because his dad owns the team, rah, rah, rah. Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
You're going to do better, are you? Like, yeah, he's totally literally running around with 19 of the best drivers in the world and doing pretty well, actually. So,
So get this, on a related, I think it's a related topic, just, you know, bear with me for a second. And I know he's going to be listening. My mate Chris, Carbon Fiber Chris on Instagram, who's just recently bought his GT3 Touring, okay?
Oh.
Couldn't be happier.
Does he deserve it, though? Chris, I hope you're not just taking that to Cars and Coffee.
Well,
otherwise there'll be silent judgment.
Exactly. No, not so silent. So, all right. So Chris bought GT3 Touring. He knows that that's my dream car, right? And so we haven't had that discussion. He's got the GT3 Touring. It's beautiful. The spec is absolutely beautiful, okay? And it's I'll be honest, it's not detracting from the excitement I'm having with my own bog standard 991.2 Carrera, but I've had to really temper my reactions to a couple of the things that he's been talking about doing with his car, and it's because I'm like, Jesus Christ, I really want that car. I wouldn't do that to that car. What are you doing? Don't do it. Like, well, it's his car. Let him do whatever he wants. But it's kind of turned into a little bit of a joke because when he first bought the car, they came with, the car had the R-style stripes on, not the GT3 style stripes, the R stripes on.
Okay.
And he was asking me for my advice and I was trying to be really politically correct and just like, well, no, I mean, it looks pretty cool. Do what you want. And in my head, I'm just like, get him off. I just really, you can't have our stripes on a GT3 Touring. What are you doing?
Can I ask why you can't? What's
because what's it's not an R. It's not an R. The GT3 Touring is so special.
Okay.
It's so special. Yeah. So anyway, He got the car, he took them off, but over the last few weeks, he's been talking to us and the guys about, you know, putting the stripes on again, and the R stripes have come back up in conversation, and I'm trying really hard. Well, I did it first. I was trying really hard to be politically correct and, like, give him a very kind of objective, balanced sort of, you know, well, you could or you couldn't kind of answer. And it's gotten to the point where I'm just like, don't you fucking dare. No, do not fucking dare do that. And then just, I feel bad doing that. Because again, it's like, it's not my car. He can do whatever he wants. He's been taking that and now he's thinking about changing his gear shifter. He found a gear shifter that came from a 911R, which has its own R flavor kind of distinct style. And was like, what do you think? Should I get that and put that in my car? Now, I think it's probably because it's carbon fiber and that's why Chris wants it. I'm like, when he came to me with this one, there was no pleasantries. There was no political correctness. I was like, do not fucking do it. You dare do that to that car. I am going to kill you.
So I just wanted to clarify this. So it's for you, it's like, it's not necessarily that it's a bad design. It's just that it says, if you've got the stripes on, it says it's a 911R, but then it's actually not. So people will be like, huh? You're trying to make it an R, but it's not. Is that sort of the vibe?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it's not an R. It's not an R. Don't put the R stripes on it. Just don't do it. Okay. Now, to be fair, I'm the one that put the GT3 body kit.
Can I just say? Yeah, or it's like carbon ceramic brakes.
Dude, exactly. Exactly. I was going to go
Who's
there.
Who's got yellow calipers?
Dude, I was going to go there. This conversation about the shifter was happening quite literally as I was painting my base Carrera calipers yellow.
I'm like, how do you spell hypocrite?
Exactly. So is Chris doing anything wrong? No. Is it just purely driven by the envy that I have for his GT3 Touring? Of course it is. Because how can I have that conversation with Chris while I'm there painting the fourth fucking coat of my yellow paint on my non-carbon ceramic brakes?
Well, I'll give you credit because as you started saying the R thing, I thought, oh man, you are just setting this up for me so well. I can't wait to get into you about the brakes. But you're putting your hand up and saying, totally.
In fact, I think I was replying to that text thread about the shifter while I was painting those brakes. And once I realized the hypocrisy, I just nearly walked away.
There is, though, I've seen a car near me, a 991.2 that has a GT2 RS decal on the door, and it's a base Carrera. And so it's like, I think at that level, like I'm actually fine with R stripes if you want them. I'll make allowances for yellow calipers because they actually look good. But once you start claiming it, once you start putting badges and decals saying your car is something it's not, I sort of go,
yeah,
I'm not sure about that. Well, although there again, if it's an old one, and again, do you know what? Who gives a fuck? Why do I care?
Exactly. We just not need to calm the fuck down, Andy. Calm down.
Yeah, we need to calm the fuck down. This is my point.
Calm down. But like, so I'm the guy that put the GT3 body kit on the base Carrera, the 997.1. The justification for that, for me, which allowed me to sleep at night, was that it was a factory option. When you bought the base Carrera, you were allowed to select the aero kit. You know, you could get the aero kit. Fair. Now, to be fair, these days, they do have aero kits that you can choose, but they don't allow you to get the GT3 aero kit or the GT3 RS aero kit like they used to.
But I actually don't have a problem with an aero kit either, because as long as you're not putting a GT3 badge or decal on the car, I think that's fine. Like, I've got, you know, my buddy Al, he's got a 996 and he's got the GT3 kit on it. That car looks incredible.
Yeah.
And he's not claiming it's a GT3.
Yeah,
he's just
totally
put the aero kit on it. So it's like when I had the whale tail on Little Green. It's like I put a RS America badge on the back. I didn't. I just like the tail.
Yeah, totally. Aero kits, fine. You know, especially if they're factory aero kits. But you see decals, the stripes that go from hood to deck lid, to me is the same as the actual GT3 badge that goes on the back of the car. It's
so distinctive. It is distinctive. I'll grant you that. So, are you going to do that? What was that spoiler you put on your 991? The Mosh hammer?
Oh, the Mosh hammer, yeah.
Thor's hammer?
the tail of Asgard on the back of my 991.1. Yeah. You know, there is a Mosh hammer Evo ducktail available for the 991.2. And again, here I am, the hypocrite. I actually am going to try and stay away from doing too much to this car, because I love how it is right now, and I love the back end of the .2991, and so, you know, maybe in some way putting that Mosh hammer spoiler on the back of my my .1 was, you know, in some way related to the fact that I didn't have the taillights that I liked at the time. Because I think I did that before I ended up doing the retrofit of the taillights. You know, so the man who's just painted his calipers yellow is saying that he's going to try and keep his car as stock as possible. Oh, and I've put a yellow sports chrono in the dash. Oh, and there wasn't a sports chrono in the dash before that. And I also did the yellow tack face. But that's, you know, like that. Oh, and I've also thrown...
Nah, that's all just fun.
I've put carbon fiber everywhere. Of course I have.
Oh, no, I know.
But yeah, like,
so hey, when what about when's the car being lowered?
I tell you, it gets lowered every time I get in the car. It doesn't need to be lowered.
No, come on.
So
it's time.
So for this car, because the changes I'm doing, I think, are all going to be sort of performance focused. I think I probably will lower this car, but I'm not going to be doing it because I want to. I'm doing it because...
I'm just doing it to shut Andy up.
Just to shut you up, yeah.
Well, because Tommy's on you about it now, right? Like I sent you that video and now you guys are communicating.
So actually, big shout out to Tommy L. Garage for all of the inspiration that has come from him to me so far through his YouTube channel with his Carrera T. We actually tried to get him on a couple of weeks in a row. It didn't work out. He will be an upcoming guest on Curb and Canyon. But yeah, he's started to take the piss off my ride height, just like you. And I don't know
whether... Oh, I noticed.
Oh, my God, yeah. And it very publicly, let's say.
I'm actually going to say, guys, if you haven't checked out his YouTube channel, it's well worth a look. He's doing some... He's got this... I love his Carrera T yellow. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, gorgeous.
And he does really cool mods. He's it's like auto amateur, but good. Sorry, I just came
it's
out.
Like it's like auto amateur done right with a better car. I hear
it's like auto professional.
Oh my god All right,
so come on, video of the week, what have you got for us?
Wait, what have I got? No, yeah, okay, I do have a video this week. No, well, that's not quite true. My friend Mark sent me a link to a video and was like, hey, this should be your video of the week. And I was like, all right. So
thank God. So I'm not actually validating you, I'm validating Mark.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Did I choose this?
Okay, that's
did
good,
I bollocks?
That's good.
No. Mark DiPietro and his awesome son Matthew, thank you guys. You guys sent me the link to this epic video that I sent to you, Andy Gaunt, as a suggestion. And your response?
What was my response? Because you always say that I shoot you down. What was my response?
You do. You actually said something like, brilliant idea, James.
I'll tell you exactly what I said. Brilliant idea, James. I wholeheartedly endorse this recommendation and thus validate your contribution to the video of the week segment. I mean, I don't know what else I can do to pander to your ego. It's
Dude, that was such a response. I did not get any sincerity from it whatsoever.
Oh, dude, that was from the heart. I poured it all out there.
But you see, part of my reaction was I'd only watched the first 30 seconds of this 20-minute video at the point that I sent
you. That's the problem for me, man. I looked and I'm like, it's 29 minutes. When am I going to watch that between now and then? So I'd had a quick... But you've clearly watched it all since, so you could give us a full detailed report. What is the video of the week, James? Let's get into it.
All right, it's called Porsche, the super secret blue Porsche collection. And it's on the Peterson Automotive Museum YouTube channel. Mm. They've got like over 100,000 subscribers and a lot of very nice videos, to be fair. But this video has been made about a private collector, a guy called Todd Blue. All of his cars aren't blue, even though that's what the... even that's what the title suggests. But he's got this... He's got this garage that basically looks like a Porsche dealership. And
yeah, it does.
I don't know what he does to make his money, but good on him. We're going to start talking about jealousy and envy again in a second, I'm sure. But basically, if there is a Porsche car out there that has been idolized or has been, you know, just drooled over the last 40 years or so, he will have one in this garage. It's incredible. He's got the 935 race car. He's got a 959. He's got a Carrera GT. He's got a 968 Turbo S. He's got a 930. He's got a GT2 RS. I'm pretty sure I saw a GT3 RS in there. He's got the slant nosed. It's just absolutely incredible. It's like somebody looked.
You haven't watched it, have you? You're just whipping out names of models.
No. It's like I have actually watched it. It's like somebody looked into my brain and said, "Oh yeah, okay, fair enough. If you won the lottery, here are all the cars that you'd buy, and let's shove them in this beautiful garage." It's funny you should say, actually, Tommy L. Garage before is auto amateur done right. That's what I thought when I saw this video. I was like, this is the type of video I wish I could make. I mean, it's, you know, there's no driving. It's basically a guy walking around his private collection, showing you all of his cars. But the cars are so phenomenal. You just can't help but watch.
No, and look, there's a couple of highlight moments for me. The first is, I'm amazed. Well, in fact, I just don't expect this to happen when I see a Porsche model of which I was previously unaware. And so there's a moment where he introduces the Porsche 597, aka the Jagdwagen, which was built as a prototype, 71 of them made in 1955, post-Second World War. It's basically a Jeep.
Right.
And I've never seen this car. I was like, what the heck? How did I not know that existed?
Yeah.
And it's the coolest looking thing ever. And it's obviously been beautifully restored, and it's got an axe attached to the bonnet. I'm like, and so, you know, we're always talking about the post-apocalyptic car.
Yeah, right.
There it is. I love, there's a moment where he has two G-body speedsters. And one is a wide body, one's a narrow body. I didn't know the narrow body one was a thing. Or I didn't know there were two different widths in that car. And apparently the narrow body one is actually quite rare. I love that he has both. And then this moment really stuck with me. He has a 904 race car, and the original engine sits on a stand, and then he has a second engine in the car so he can take it to the track. But his story about why that car is so appealing, I just love this. It's not because he, you know, spent his youth watching footage of the Targa Florio or any of these sorts of things. It's because the car looks like the cars that were in the cartoon Speed Racer. And as soon as he said it, I've never connected those dots. And as soon as he said it, I thought, holy shit, it does.
Yeah.
It actually does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really cool vid. I really liked it too.
And to be fair, a lot of the cars are blue. One of the ones that stood out for me was, I think it's a 356 in Bali blue. And that's the blue that sort of influenced Bluey, my 996. And I'm looking at it now, and I'm clearly, you know, didn't quite hit the Bali blue color because it's not identical. But man, just what an absolute dream collection. Yeah. So if you basically want to just have one of those, you know, what if I won the lottery kind of conversations, and what would my Porsche collection look like? What would a dream collection look like? This is the video for you.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, I think that brings us to the end of another exciting, action-packed, fun-filled episode of Curb and Kenny.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for checking in and for sticking with us as we are always getting these episodes out on a regular basis. Tight schedule we keep here at Curb and Canyon.
Yeah, and let me say, guys, it's not through lack of trying. This sounds like excuses, I know, but... But life and distance really does get in the way on these sometimes. There's so many days where we're organized and then something happens, a work thing happens, a family thing happens, whatever. So it does. But we I've got to say, honestly, every time I sit down to record this, I love having these conversations, and I love the feedback and comments that you all send us. Thank you so much. It genuinely means a lot to us. So we will keep trying to bring you as much content as we can. We've got some rad guests coming up, actually. There's actually quite a few lined up. So yeah, keep tuning in, guys. Stick with us. We love you all and really appreciate your sticking with us on the journey.
All right, bud. Catch you in the next one. Take care, guys.